This is Morning Air.
This is about educating a people that for 40 years haven't been given the full truth. It's time now to speak the truth.
When you do things to the best of your ability, keeping Jesus number one and doing everything you possibly can for His glory, that's a winner.
You are called to make the light of Christ shine brightly in the world.
Bringing the light of Christ to start your day.
This is Morning Air with John Morales on Relevant Radio.
Good morning. Thanks for joining us today. Glenn Livern's in for John Morales. Once again, John will rejoin us again next weekend. We look forward to that and lots to look forward to this hour as well here on Morning Air. How do we get young people caring about church back into it or bringing friends? Better yet, we'll talk with Father Jeremy Plouffe about that before this hour is through. Sometimes, maybe often, to have joy in our lives, that's a choice we have to make. Choosing Joy with Jenny Thing, singer and speaker, joining us before this hour is through. And a story of really persevering through difficult times and still finding joy. A mom of 10, 5 on earth, 5 in heaven. Author, writer, blogger, and former co-worker, long time producer for the Drew Mariani Show. Joining us right now, it's Cassie Everetts. Cassie, great to have you along this morning.
Thanks, Glenn. Thanks so much for having me on.
Always great to hear your voice and to hear it once again. And as part of working in the company, we'd run into each other in person once in a while, but it wasn't until I heard you on Drew's program one day talking about miscarriage that I realized how many miscarriages you had and how much loss that you and your family have had to deal with there. And you've written so well about that and been such a good help for others. Miscarriage, correctly, is something that is much more common than people realize and sadly isn't really talked about all that much, is it?
Yeah, you know, miscarriage is much more common than we realize. And when I went through my own losses, I didn't realize how often miscarriage and pregnancy loss happens to women and couples. And so when we look at our pews in our church, so miscarriage happens to about 25% of women. That's 1 in 4. And so the reality is our pews are filled with grieving women and couples who've experienced this kind of loss. But for the most of them, they never reached out to anybody. They didn't know who to turn to. They didn't know where to seek that comfort and that healing. And I think that's where I found myself when we went through our own 5 losses. Even though it's very common and it happens, and I feel like now, maybe it's because of social media, but I feel like there's a little bit of this stigma being removed that people are speaking out more about it. But when I went through my own losses, I felt very alone and very isolated and didn't know where to turn to. And that was part of the reason why after going through that, I met up with Patrick O'Hearn, the co-author, and we put together the book Nursery of Heaven to really help those, especially in the church, help those women and those couples to find healing, to find a sense of comfort, to know they're not alone, to help them be strengthened in their faith and hope in God.
What were some of the, I guess, situations maybe you had to deal with, people really awkward in terms of language? And give us an idea of some of the wrong things to say or do around people who've had such a loss.
Yeah, you know, personally, I think, and I think one of the big things is not saying anything at all and not reaching out. If you know that somebody has gone through a loss, maybe a family member, maybe a close friend, send them a message, send them a text, ask them how they're doing, say you're praying for them, maybe make them a meal, send them a card. Just those small acts of really acknowledging that this was a loss. This was a baby that they're grieving, that they wanted, and, you know, a unique individual soul that they hold dear and close to their hearts and that was already living within the mother. And so I think those small acts of reaching out really mean the world. And then I guess, you know, and when I had people make comments, I didn't really say much back because I think their intention is well, but to just not write off the loss of saying, oh, well, you can get pregnant again. You can have another baby, or you're young, or I'm sure this will happen, or, you know, that those kind of things that make that unique loss seem kind of like just another number or something to be brushed under the rug. Because it's not. Like I said, that baby that was lost at that time is a unique person, a unique soul that will never be repeated in all of human history. You know, made in the image of likeness of God, formed in the image and looking of the parents, you know, having their DNA. And so the uniqueness of that life, I think when people make comments, just be careful not to brush that aside when women and couples are grieving.
What has been most helpful in making it through this situation?
I think really prayer. prayer really helps. I know it can be very difficult at times to pray, and I felt that during our own losses. It was, you know, thanks be to God for the grace of my husband who said, you know, we need to pray. We're going to sit down and do our evening rosary when it was hard to even, you know, utter a Hail Mary as I sat there and just kind of rolled my finger over the beads. But take the time to pray. Pray with your spouse, especially because husband and wife, they grieve so differently. And miscarriage and pregnancy loss increases the chance of divorce rate. And to be aware of that and to just really cling together as a married unit and rely on the gift of the sacrament that you received and the graces, and to take the time to pray with your spouse. That's very helpful personally, is to pray. For other people, in regards, if you're wondering about, you know, ways that other people can help somebody who's grieving, reaching out, letting them know that they're being prayed for, offering to, if they have other children, offering to watch their children, making them a meal, sending them flowers, sending them cards, and not just like in that moment when it's happening, though, during that time, that week, that month, but, you know, maybe remembering the date of the baby's, you know, due date or the time of loss, and acknowledging that, you know, 8 months, 6 months, a year later, or, you know, in a few months, going, and again, asking them how they're doing. Because I think one of the difficult things is when women and couples experience a miscarriage or pregnancy loss, is the loss always stays with them. You know, they may seem okay. They're going back to their work. They're going back to the duties of jobs or taking care of children or what needs to be done. But there's a piece of their heart that forever holds that loss and is forever changed. And so the world seems to go on and everyone goes about their business. And sure, the person and the couple may seem fine. They're over it. They've moved on. But the reality is they haven't, and they never will. And so I think just acknowledging, taking the time to acknowledge that loss, you know, maybe, like I said, a few months down the road or a year later, just to ask how they're doing, just to continue to say, I'm praying for you, or can I do something for you? Or, you know, sending them a card or flowers on the anniversary of their due date. Just those small acts really go to mean the world to somebody who's going through a loss, and also to help them to feel like, okay, I'm not in this alone. Like, I'm not going through this, just me and my husband. I don't feel so isolated. And it acknowledges the life that they lost as well.
Our guest this morning for this portion of Morning Air here on Relevant Radio is Cassie Everts. She's the author of Nursery of Heaven, Marriage, Stillbirth, and Infant Loss in the Lives of the Saints and Today's Parents, talking about stillbirth, something that's not talked about that often. Cassie, we talked a little bit about the effects on a marriage, the effects on a family. I was adopted. My folks have since long passed. May God rest their souls. But they had a lot of loss before I came along. They had a miscarriage in the early 50s, loss of my mom's, both of her parents and a grandparent within a couple years leading up to the death a couple years before I was adopted, of a baby brother who lasted 3 days on the planet and then passed away. So after all that loss, and I never really understood that timeline until we revisited the conversation, if there was any hereditary info about me before we were expecting our first child, and there wasn't any because adoptions were sealed up pretty tightly back in the early 60s. But I came to understand that timeline, and A, what a gift adoption could be. And that's something we can talk about just a little bit too, but something along the way that, and again, my folks were awesome people, but it seemed like my dad occasionally would still say a few things about it being my mom's fault. She shouldn't have been shoveling snow right before the miscarriage and things like that. And how important is it for, you know, couples to come together and not be blaming one another for something like this?
Oh, yeah. Well, first of all, I'm sorry for, you know, the loss that your parents had experienced. But yeah, it's it's of the utmost importance for as much as they can for couples to find healing together, and to not to blame the other spouse, because the woman especially, she already feels so much guilt, even though there's nothing that she could have changed or done. You know, there's times I went back through my loss and it's like, oh, I shouldn't have done this, or I shouldn't have, you know, picked up my 4-year-old, or I shouldn't have, you know, picked up my 4-year-old nephew, or, done this or that. And so I think you go through that and you're already beating yourself up because you want to know what you could have done different, or I should have, been more, taking this vitamin or medication or what the doctor said. And there's nothing really that you could have done to prevent it. And to not blame yourself, because especially as a woman who already is feeling the loss of the child that she once was carrying, really can carry that guilt. So to not blame yourself, and just allowing yourself to grieve through the loss, taking the time you need to acknowledge the loss, acknowledge that it happened, and really find that sense of healing. And it is very important for, as I mentioned, that, the divorce rate can go up or increase after pregnancy loss or miscarriage, but to really be, a unit together as a husband and wife, and to come together in prayer, to keep going to Mass, receiving the sacraments, if it's receiving some kind of counseling together. You know, there's nothing wrong with reaching out for help. It doesn't mean that you're weak. You know, you're going through a loss. If you experience the loss of a child later in life, you would probably seek out professional help if needed, and there's nothing wrong with needing to do that. There's no sense of, I think the other guilt that can happen is that a woman can feel guilty that she can't maybe just, why can't I move on? Why can't I just get over it? I was only, 6 weeks or 8 weeks or 12 weeks or however many weeks pregnant. Why can't I just move on? I feel like I'm just trapped in this grief and sorrow. And I think oftentimes as a woman that we see the husband sometimes move on, we see him, it seems apparent that he's over his grief. And I felt that a lot with our first miscarriage, like, wow, he got over that quick. And I'm really stuck still in this cycle of sorrow and still grieving the loss. And it's important to remember that men and women grieve so differently and in different ways. And to not assume that your husband is not grieving, when the reality is he probably is. He's grieving, and he's even grieving another loss because he sees the loss of joy and the hurt that his wife is going through. And I think sometimes, maybe that guilt that putting on the wife is because the husband can't help the wife. He couldn't stop the loss of the baby. And as a husband and a father, they want to feel like a protector. And that's their role, to protect and to serve the family. And so when that's taken from them, their child is taken, and then to see their wife, their spouse also go through this grief and sorrow, I think that is like another layer of loss that the husband experiences, because he can't take either of those things away. And there's really nothing that the husband can do to help prevent his wife from grieving, because it's just a natural process that she needs to go through. And so I think it's very important for the husband and wife to just both support each other during the time of loss. For the husband to ask how the wife is doing, just to be present, to be a comforter to her in her time of sorrow, to acknowledge that it's going to take longer probably for her, to maybe do things, I think, for both spouses, do things for each other that, cheers them up, or as difficult as it is for the woman during the time, to do something for her spouse, to do, maybe make his special meal or favorite meal that he likes, or smile once in a while, laugh once in a while, just to let him know that you still have that light and that joy in you, and that things are going to be okay, even during this time of grief. I think it's great if couples take the time to go on more date nights together during this time, maybe get away for a few nights, plan a little vacation, take the time to just focus on your marriage and how you can come together and help each other grieve.
I don't know, maybe it's a guy thing, Cassie, but, there's the loss of the child, but then, being at occasionally, a funeral for a loss of a young person, and the, you've got the young mom there, or the widow, and that is so sad for a guy, too. Like you said, the dad in the situation dealing for the loss of the child and the wife being sad. And that's definitely an extra layer to note as well. I'm curious how in putting that beautiful book together, how that helped you and what you maybe were surprised to learn in that process.
Well, in putting the book together, it was really beautiful to hear other people's stories who've gone through loss, who've gone through losses later in pregnancy, had delivered a stillborn child or had a prenatal diagnosis where they found out their child would only make it, halfway through the pregnancy. It even includes a few stories of infant loss of couples who had delivered their baby and was able to hold their baby but only lived, a few days or weeks. And so to hear these stories, and not just the stories, but because they're heart-wrenching. And I think sometimes I feel like Almost Guilty is one of those books that's kind of difficult to read because it's a tearjerker. Even sometimes when I go through it, I find myself tearing up and crying because the stories are heart-wrenching. But I think one thing I learned is the beautiful testament of faith that these couples were able to hold and to cling on to. And to share that, even though they don't have all the answers and they don't necessarily know what's going to happen next. Some of the couples, when they wrote their stories, they still were trying to conceive another child. They still were struggling. But for them to acknowledge the role of God in their life and the role of God in the loss and being able to see Him, to be able to see Him in that loss, I think really is something that's very beautiful. Another thing that I guess was surprising for me when we put the book together was just the stories of the saints. We think the saints had it all together. We hear these stories and we look up to them and put them on these pedestals, and rightly so, because they lived these holy lives. But they also went through the everyday kind of sufferings and trials that we face, as individuals, that we face as parents, that we face as spouses. And many saints went through, also experienced, they went through the loss of a child. They had to suffer either a miscarriage or child loss or struggling with infertility. And so I think it was beautiful to see these lives of these saints, servants of God, Chiara Corbella, Saint Gianna. We know of her heroic choice to choose life when she was faced with the doctors pressuring her to terminate the pregnancy, to have an abortion when they discovered a tumor. And her, we know of that, but we don't know, most of the time, we don't hear about the miscarriage that she had, the two miscarriages that she had between her third and fourth child. Saints Louis and Zelia, we look at them as these outstanding parents. Here they are canonized together as a married couple. Five of their daughters became religious sisters. We know them as the parents of the famous Saint Therese. But a lot of people don't know of the loss that they had of four children in a four-year period. A child at 5 months, 8 months, 5 years old, a child at 7 weeks. So that, they experience that grief. They experience that loss. And I think when we hear these stories of the saints, it can give us a sense of hope because they went through the same thing we're going through. They went through the grief. They went through the loss. But the difference, and hopefully the example for us, is how they clung to Christ. And I think to look at those stories and read them and to meditate on their faith and their trust in God, their trust and hope in eternal life, because that's a promise that is for each of us. And I think that's also the promise that can bring couples hope, is knowing that these children that we lost, that we'll see them once again. We'll see them, God willing, when we get to heaven, when we reach eternity. And so knowing that their lives here on earth are not present, they're not with us, but they live forever with Christ, seeing and gazing upon the glory and the beauty of God, praising Him, praying for us, and living there for all eternity. And so their soul is not gone. They're in heaven.
Cassie, we thank you so much for putting that beautiful book, Nursery of Heaven, together. Just a quick minute left, but I wanted to give you a chance to share how the Lord has blessed you with the children that you have on earth to take care of in just quite an amazing way.
Yeah, I never thought that our story would write this way. I never thought that we'd go through these 8 years of infertility and miscarriage. And when we were going through it, I never imagined how God would write the story. And I think in those moments of pain and just complete surrender, where you eventually find yourself, you really allow God just to take control. And so after we experienced our losses, we adopted two beautiful sons. Our oldest sons are from Ghana, Africa. We adopted them when they were 4 and 5. As soon as my oldest could speak English, we found ourselves pregnant. Well, he would begin praying for a baby sister. And I had to explain to him not all of our history at that time, but just, you know, maybe we'll adopt a little girl someday. Within 2 months, we found ourselves expecting, who is now Grace, our 5-year-old. And then we had another son and a daughter. So we went from 0 to 5 kids in just less than 4 years. And I think the message is that God has a plan. In your struggle, there is hope, and God will take care of you.
Oh, such a beautiful story. Cassie, thank you so much for sharing all the heartache that you've had, but the good that can come through that with a good, strong, steady faith. Thanks again for all the good work you did for Relevant Radio through the years and that you continue to do as an author and a blogger. And we're just so happy that your good news is out there again, the book Nursery of Heaven. Cassie Everts is our guest this morning. Cassie, thank you so much. We continue with Morning Air, our story corner on the way before the hour is through. We'll hear about joy in a variety of circumstances from singer and speaker Jenny Thing. And right around the corner, how to bring youth back to the faith. Father Jeremy Plouffe joins us next as Morning Air continues here on Relevant Radio and on the Relevant Radio app.
Bringing the light of Christ to start your day. This is Morning Air with John Morales on Relevant Radio and the Relevant Radio app.
Landing for John today. Thanks for joining us for Morning Air. Still to come, our story corner on the way. Some joyful conversation with Jenny Thing from Joy in All Seasons. Great singer and speaker coming our way to inspire you and get you rolling this morning. And right now, time to look into, well, it's a problem every generation, but how to keep young people engaged and get them re-engaged as we strive to rebuild the church. Father Jeremy Plouffe is with us today.
Getting young people back to church. There's a lot of rebuilding that needs to be done in the wake of COVID and just kind of general demographic trends and maybe some slow to come back after some of the church scandals and the like. But always, no matter how things are rolling along, we need to keep the church alive for the next generation. And so we're going to talk a little bit about reaching young folks today and what that takes. And it used to be, Father, that the pattern would be hopefully kids get going when they're baptized and show up every week for religious ed and get confirmed and keep on going and never stop. Not an uncommon way was kids to maybe fall away a little bit toward college and in return, and certainly when it was time to get married and have kids and get them baptized and all of that. But none of that seems automatic anymore. Do we need to kind of camp out on that reality a little bit and know that our work is cut out for us?
Absolutely. And I think that's a great observation, Glenn, about, you know, this is not your grandfather's church, you might say, in that that usual progression of, you know, there might be a hiccup or two during the college years, but for the most part, everybody is back in line or back in the pews and contributing to the parish, not only with their finances, but also with their time. But you're absolutely right in that we're not seeing this anymore. And I think a mistake that a lot of us will fall into, and I'm just as guilty as anyone on this, is to just sort of get frustrated and say, well, they should be. They should be coming. That it's their responsibility. It's their obligation. They should be coming. And while that's true, you know, the baptized have the obligation to attend Mass, you know, I think rather than just saying that or deciding that or declaring that, we need to have a more forward-moving angle of, well, even if that is their obligation and they're not fulfilling that obligation, maybe there's something you and I and everyone else out there, maybe there's something we can do to help them fulfill that obligation or help them even realize this is not merely an obligation but a great thing to do, attend Mass.
One of the things a recent study showed is that kids as young as 12, 13 years old made that decision to maybe as much as it's in their power to quit going. Those that would fall away, the falling away happens younger and younger. I believe that must have been a shock to several.
Sure, sure. And certainly it still surprises me hearing those numbers again and again. It's certainly not something that would have occurred to me that young. Although, I mean, I will admit, you know, if my parents would have said, hey, you can sleep in this Sunday, I probably would have been all about that. Sounds great, Mom. No worries. to that end, there is something, again, something fresh in the air, something new in the water where questioning any authority, the church included, is certainly part of the mix in school these days and in the culture of the young. And it's not to be excluded from the culture of the more seasoned adults, middle age and higher, where we say, you know, maybe I'm not quite so sure about the church anymore. I'm not quite so sure about Mass. And so not only do we need to reengage our own self and make sure that I'm not just coming to Mass out of old habit, this is what I do on Sunday morning as opposed to Tuesday morning, but also make sure that, hey, I help other people realize, hey, Mass is important. I might not be able to articulate every single reason in the moment, but I can help myself out and then hopefully help others in coming to find those answers of why coming to Mass together on Sunday is super important.
And maybe just a little bit of proper respect, Father, to building that habit, though. I mean, going because you have to until you realize all the other reasons why you ought to want to be there.
Yes, and I remember a friend of mine in college, he was a year behind me in college, he talked about, he liked to use that word naivete, which it's not my favorite word, but he said exactly what you're saying, Glenn, in that, you know, at some point we just do even homework at school because we have to. You know, we're not going to get to go out for recess if we don't have our homework done. But then hopefully at some point, will come to appreciate learning for its own sake, or appreciate learning because I'm interested in this topic, or appreciate learning because I want to have a career in this field, and so I better know that field, I better know that science inside and out if I want to be successful at my future job or career. And so there's something similar with the church. And like, yes, you know, there's a sense of, yes, we have to go to church, and maybe a vague sense of, you know, it's important to go to Mass. But then also in that following through with that going to Mass, coming to realize why this is important, making it our own, and then just like the careerist, get excited about doing that worship at Mass.
Also along those lines, in terms of not letting ourselves think it's so much of a choice as much as, well, it's an obligation, but a happy obligation to be there. And thinking of not so much even the jobs we can do as volunteers around the parish, but even at Mass, we can be helpful to others by being there. And it's not only for our own amusement or the feelings that we may or may not get on any given week.
Sure. I mean, in all sorts of ways of just inspiring people by your own presence. Just like, hey, John and Jane Doe showed up. That moves me to recognize, hey, maybe I was dragging myself here, but John and Jane Doe came, and golly, that might inspire me to be more fervent in my attendance at Mass. Or even just the simplest thing, I mean, even laying aside, as you said, you know, volunteering with stuff at the church, even just saying, I'm going to sing out whether my voice isn't the best or always on key, or maybe I don't even know the tune. But that can, even in itself, that simple thing of, all right, I'm going to give it what I got as long as I'm here, that can move so many other people to just not only feel more comfortable being at Mass, more comfortable participating in Mass, but even inspire them just by that simple, almost effortless thing of singing at Mass to make sure they can be all the more fervent themselves and saying, I want to explore why this Christian thing is so important, because I see these other people singing at Mass and celebrating the Eucharist. That can be just the thing that pushes the person who might just be on the edge of not being so confident in coming to Mass to say, I want to find out why this Christian thing is so important.
Father Jeremy Plouffe, our guest, talking about re-engaging young people in our parishes, getting them to stay, getting them to come back, and doing a better job of both of those things. I think we talked a little bit about that, you know, age around 12, 13, when kids start to think a little more for themselves and enter those wonderful teen years, sometimes deciding to move away from the faith a bit. But I think during those years, for me, I grew up and went to Sunday school, depending how often my folks would drop me off. Some years were better or more involved than others. But during 7th and 8th grade, we had to show up every week for our Lutheran confirmation. And learned a lot about the nuts and bolts, you know, put little pieces and snips here and there together. And then about the same time, the movie Jesus of Nazareth, which is one of the most excellent film versions of the life of our Lord, was on TV at the same time. And that was a 1-2 punch for me to the degree that I was so fired up. I even remember writing little graffiti in my math book that Jesus lives, you know. And I mean, how crazy was that? And so, you know, I was on fire at that point, and we had a pretty good youth group, a really good youth group, and that got me going quite a lot. Even the youth Sunday school stuff was good for high schoolers, let alone the field trips and things like that that we would take. But then I soon was drawn upon to start teaching the, I think, sixth graders myself as a high schooler, because we needed anybody that was willing and a bit fired up. And I missed out a little bit on some of the more learning myself. But I think to engage young people, people of any age, when they're at those points of being fired up, you know, maybe it is during that intensive confirmation education. Maybe it's, you know, at whatever point in life, it's something you can tell if you're in their life, you're in that young person's life, and that faith light bulb seems to have gone off or started to burn a little more brightly. You know, let's continue to activate them.
You know, I think, Glenn, that experience of yours in your high school years and middle school years, too, that you were talking about, see, that just gets me, like, we already have the answer. You know, we don't need a new program, you know, or this complicated study of, well, what are we going to do to slightly more encourage a higher percentage of people this age to that age to attend Mass. You know, it's you know, no deposit, no return. Another friend of mine from college, he was a senior when I was a freshman, he kept saying to me, like, anyone can smell phony miles and miles away. But when we have your testimony here, Glenn, about, hey, I was so excited, I wrote in my math book, Jesus Lives, and I even said, I'm going to help teach the elementary school kids, even though I'm only in high school, that's the secret sauce. That's the, hey, we have this excitement and, right, no deposit, no return. So if I'm going to get something out of this, I better put something into it myself. And that's what's so exciting, too, to see when we have great examples of lots of great young people, whether it's middle school, high school, college, or 20-somethings, where we see them like, yes, I do value this, and I see the value in that, and they want to put more into the holy faith. And that alone can give a lot of us a great deal of joy and excitement and then catch fire ourselves from their excitement. But then hopefully, in all of us saying, this is important to me, I want to light the fire for other people to see as well, to not get discouraged by the lack of immediate results or the fact that, you know, maybe some people who we're really hoping we'd reach are not so receptive. You know, we have to play the long game, if you will, and say, like, you know what, I'm going to keep on doing the best for the church, the best for the faith, and then hopefully over the long term, we'll get a lot more people a lot more excited to share what we already can see.
We've talked earlier, Father, about a survey showing the different reasons why people begin attending church. And far and away, just blowing everything else out of the water, was a personal invitation from someone else. Hey, a friend saying, hey, join me, come along, let's go to this, let's go to that, let's go to mass. That was like 80-some% compared to anything else. And I think a pastoral visit was maybe 6% and maybe 2% for advertising or any kind of fancy marketing campaigns we do. That really speaks to that power, and coupled with the authenticity, especially this younger generation today, you know, maybe the baby boomers were used to being sold all the time, so they almost kind of expect a little bit of spin and try to communicate in that way, but authenticity wins the day anymore for sure. So, you know, that no frills. Hey, come on along. I know you haven't been there before, and there's a few things that'll seem weird, but let's get through it. Maybe you can enjoy the message and worry about when to stand up and sit down later, and just, you know, being honest about it.
You know, and I think so. And everything from my own limited experience of even going to one of the local league baseball games. Of, you know, I you know, as much as I love baseball, like even for a local baseball team, I find myself a little hesitant. Like, I don't know if I'm going to go to a game. But somebody else just says to me, like, hey, I go sometimes. Why don't we, you know, get a ticket on the same day and we'll meet each other there? That kind of gets me like, okay, yes, now I'm going to go and see what this local baseball team is all about. And all the more so with the faith, in that it tends to be something where we see the faith so often as this private thing that, hey, like, I don't want to tell anyone else what to believe. And just the frustration that this priest, and I'm sure every priest in the diocese has, when people say, like, well, I don't want to tell anyone what to think, or I don't want to invite anyone to Mass because it might make them uncomfortable. It's like, well, goodness sakes, you know, the whole point of receiving the faith, receiving grace from the sacraments, is to spread the word, share it with others. And as you were referencing in that survey, Glenn, like, just the simplest thing is to say to a friend, a family member, a neighbor, like, hey, let's go to Mass together. Let's go to Mass together. Yeah, sure, as you said, Glenn, it might be, some things might look a little weird to you or unusual or unfamiliar, but all the more, I want to show you what greatness is inside those church walls.
Yeah, let's not let that good news go unshared. Father Jeremy Plouffe joining us with great ideas to keep young people fired up, or get them re-fired up, get ourselves re-fired up for church as well. Father Plouffe in the Diocese of St. Cloud, Minnesota, joining us for Morning Air this morning here on Relevant Radio. We continue. We've got our story corner for the day coming up right around the corner, and talking about joy. My goodness, joy in all seasons is her ministry. She's a singer and a speaker, a retreat leader. Jenny Thing joins us right around the corner next as Morning Air continues here on Relevant Radio and on the Relevant Radio app.
From Maui to Maine, you're listening to Morning Air with John Morales, coast to coast on Relevant Radio and the Relevant Radio app.
Morning Air continues here on Relevant Radio. Thanks for joining us. It's Glenn in for John. Coming up in the next hour, we'll talk about Sunday, the Solemnity of the Assumption and the Blessed Virgin Mary. We're joined by Father James Kubicki at that point. Eric Scheidler along, too, with a whole bunch of pro-life news for us right after the top of the hour as well. But right now, we are talking about joy. We're talking about choosing joy with a, how's this for a bio, a passionate live-out-loud speaker and vocalist and an identity crisis survivor who uses life lessons, humor, and most importantly, scripture. Jenny Thing lives in rural Minnesota with her wonderful husband. There are two terrific kids who she homeschools, and had a chance to talk with her on Morning Air and various other venues throughout the years. And it's always a pleasure. Jenny Thing, great to have you along today.
Well, good morning. Great to be here.
Talking about joy with you, and people will hear that just in your voice over the next few minutes. But wanted to talk about joy at this time, as you know, we thought we're kind of coming out of about a year and a half of this odd COVID thing, and well, it doesn't look like it's quite all the way over yet, and some new restrictions coming back in certain areas, some mask mandates or vaccine mandates, things like that. So that's maybe stealing joy from folks a little bit, just as summer winds down in parts of the country where that means the a beautiful, you know, 2-3 months of perfect weather is ending. We need a blast of joy there. Maybe it's going back to that fall routine, some digging that and some wishing the days of sleeping in and swimming would never end. And so being able to bring joy to everyday life is something that we need to do. Talk about how you're able to do that. Of course, not perfectly every single day, every single moment, but how that was such a big deal that became the name basically of your ministry, joyinallseasons.com, where people can find out more.
Well, I started to just kind of look at the different areas of my life where I was really just feeling dry, or, you know, those times where you feel separated from just wanting to know more about the Lord and just feeling those place of loneliness. And I realized that's not how I was designed. If you go back into the Word, it talks about God's love constantly bringing us back to a point of relationship with Him. And so as I was in those desert places in my heart, in my life, and that just means there's no new growth. It just seems dry and dreary. And living in Minnesota, you know, sometimes that can be definitely a time of winter where there is new life growing, but you just don't see it. It's everything seems kind of dormant in that part of your life. But I also lived in Arizona for a time, and sometimes that desert dwelling, you know, that actually literally means dry and barren, it seems, but there's still life there. And that's where I started just applying God's love into my life and what He has done through His faithfulness. And I think in that purpose, in that time of realizing how God created us, that even though we might seem separate from Him, He has not gone anywhere. It was my own heart. And so when I started studying about the gifts and the fruits of His Spirit that He promises us as we seek Him, as we receive Jesus as our Savior, and we are able to take those steps to realize where those those barren places are, that we can apply those same truths in every aspect and every season of our life. And so the main point that I just get so excited about is the gift of joy, because that is something that, as you were just saying, in all the circumstances that are around us, we oftentimes forget that that is actually a fruit of the Spirit. That means that that is something that is inside of us that God gave us through his love and faithfulness, the fruits of the Spirit, love, joy, peace. And so I started focusing on that and applying those truths and choosing to use and accept that gift that God has given, that gift of joy that comes from his love.
And that is where it comes from. Maybe a good time to point out, too, the difference between happiness we might get from external circumstances and joy that does ultimately stem from within.
Absolutely. Joy is a choice. Because it is something that we are gifted through the power of the Holy Spirit, as God has given us. And as we talk about the power that God has given us, it literally is, those gifts are powerful. And when I was in those places of desert, which, you know, honestly, we have many seasons of our lives throughout every day, even. So choosing joy isn't just like, okay, I'm going to be happy now. Happiness is an emotion, and it is so fleeting. There are times where I'm really happy when I get something accomplished or checked off the list, but then I realize there's more on the list, and that happiness just seems to go away. I realize that I need to choose the joy that I have an ability to do what is on the list, or those opportunities are there, especially when you talk about homeschooling. Not every opportunity in homeschooling is something that fills me with joy, but, or makes me happy. But the joy comes from saying, Lord, thank you that I have that gift to be able to homeschool. Thank you, Lord, that I have the opportunity to reach my children on this level. And God, I ask that you would help me to see beyond the circumstance that I find myself in, whether it's homeschooling or maybe it's just child rearing, or it's something else that could really, as you said before, can steal our joy, something that would take away from the gift that God has given us to then also take care of that happiness and kind of push that to the wayside. We want to make sure that we are focused on God in every circumstance and the fact that his love is faithful and he has never left us or forsaken us. And so when we choose that joy, the happiness will come. But joy doesn't look like just laughing all the time and, you know, making it seem like you're happy. That's not true joy. True joy is the hope and the love that we have from the Father.
Singer, speaker, retreat leader, homeschooling mom, Jenny Thing, joining us for this portion of Morning Air this morning here on Relevant Radio. God has blessed you with a very interesting life and an interesting set of talents and skills to share with others. Let's talk about bringing that joy to bear in practical terms. One of the things you do, and as a matter of fact, you're doing it tonight for those listening in the Twin Cities area, maybe the Northern Edge, an outdoor concert at Library Park in Moore, Minnesota tonight, starting at 6:30 with Jenny Thing, just coincidentally on the day we end up talking with you here. So I'm happy to give a mention there, but something like putting on a concert, you're going to need to be kind of broadcasting that joy. How do you make sure you're in that right frame of mind to do that? And then, you know, there might be some days when you're not feeling it, but does that joy kind of come through giving up that performance to the Lord ultimately?
That's just it. You need to pray first. I always pray first. I pray during. And the thing is with joy, it's not meant for us to hold on to, because then you walk around saying, well, I'm joyful. Joy is a gift, and it is because it's a fruit. There are seeds that need to be planted and fruit that needs to be shared. And so when I do a concert like this, obviously it's going to be, there's lots of prayer that goes into it. But what I pray about the most are the people that will be there, that God would show me with his eyes, you know, to see beyond what I could see with my own, if that makes sense. So instead of seeing, if you see somebody that looks like they're really not enjoying things, just to see how much God loves them and know that, so I can share that joy with them. Maybe it's just, it takes things out of what I quote unquote planned and puts it into a place that would make that person feel not only loved, but accepted. And those two things really do go hand in hand, and joy is part of that. If I was just going by happiness, you know, somebody that was looking a little bit put off by what I'm doing or doesn't like that certain song, although I do tell people at concerts oftentimes, if you don't like this song, wait 5 minutes, you'll have another one. Maybe you'll like that one better. But in this case, you know, when I'm talking about sharing joy, remembering that that same gift, that same love that the Father has given us, the same salvation that Jesus laid his life down for us for something we couldn't do ourselves, that same totality of God's grace for each of us is for me, but it's also for that person that I may be seeing that display of, you know, separation or maybe not that joy that I have. And so that's how I go into events. It's not about how well I do. It's how good God is and what he's going to do through the music or even just the relationship that can come from a conversation. And so it's pretty exciting when you have those opportunities, especially when you have, you know, 5 or 6 people gathered or more or whatever. 1 or 2 even is good. You always have an opportunity to share the fruit that God has given us. And that fruit we're talking about today is joy.
One of the fruits of the Spirit, joy. I just love that idea of sharing that fruit. We're not supposed to eat the whole thing ourselves, right? We're supposed to share it, and then the seeds and the fruit to plant those as well. What a beautiful thought, as well. Now, this last year and a half of COVID times, for anyone who had done public speaking or performing of any sort, life changed a lot, and that happened for you as well with, weren't able to do things in person, able to do some things virtually by video. How was that experience of joy, maybe the ebb and flow a little bit, and then the return of getting to do that after COVID times here?
I think it really gave me more of a focus, even though joy has been my passion for a long time, true joy has been my passion for a long time, but the focus on how God can use the opportunities that we find ourselves in, the circumstances. I try to remember that there's no such thing as a bad day. There are just days with extra challenges. And just putting that into light. And again, remember I said true joy isn't about everything going right. It's not about pasting on a smile. It's about knowing where your hope comes from. And I think that during that time, for me personally, it helped me really be, that's where the rubber met the road, as the case may be, where I was able to say, okay, Lord, I don't like what's going on, but I trust you. I trust you because you've always been faithful. I trust you because you've always seen me through. And you know what? Honestly, there were some really dry desert times during that. And so I really had to look at the fact that God was not surprised by what happened, and he's not going to be surprised at what happened before, but he promises us that he will never leave us or forsake us during those challenges. And so that did, it did stretch me. It did encourage me to get deeper into his word and into prayer, but also to reach out again. Like you said, it had to look a little differently, but if I'm going through this, somebody else is too. And so to remember that this time isn't about just me. This is about praying for others. And that was the beautiful thing. Just again, remembering that praying for people, really going into a time of purposely encouraging someone else was so important. And whether we ended up going through something similar again or not, I don't know what the future holds. But I know that I have learned through this last time that the power of encouragement and the power of praying for others definitely helps them. But it also keeps me focused on what is the most important, which is my relationship with Jesus Christ.
Jenny, we appreciate your beautiful and joyful heart each and every time we get to talk. Find out more at joyinallseasons.com. Singer and speaker Jenny Thing joining us this morning. We continue with Morning Air right now. It's time for a look and listen at today's Story Corner. Our story today, a bit of a history lesson. It's called Surrendering to Sin. It's from Jim Fletcher and Roger Howerton. In late September of 1864, Confederate General Nathan Bedford Forrest was leading his troops north from Decatur, Alabama, toward Nashville. But to make it to Nashville, Forrest would have to defeat the Union Army at Athens, Alabama. When the Union commander, Colonel Wallace Campbell, refused to surrender, Forrest asked for a personal meeting and took Campbell on an inspection of his troops. But each time they left a detachment, the Confederate soldiers simply packed up and moved to another position, artillery and all. Forrest and Campbell would then arrive at the new encampment and continue to tally up the impressive number of Confederate soldiers and weaponry. By the time they returned to the forts, Campbell was convinced he couldn't win, and he surrendered unconditionally. Satan likes to deceive the Christian into thinking that he must be a slave to sin. Once he's done that, the Christian surrenders unconditionally. We're reminded, though,
From St. Paul in Galatians 5:1, for freedom Christ set us free. So stand firm and do not submit again to the yoke of slavery. That's our Story Corner for today. You can experience it again or share it in podcast form on the Relevant Radio app, as well as online at relevantradio.com. And we always welcome your suggestions. Feel free to send those along, a story you may have written or come across you think others would like to enjoy. Send it to us, morningair@relevantradio.com, morningair@relevantradio.com. Some news headlines coming up next, and we continue with more of Morning Air in the next hour. We'll take a look and kind of dive into the Assumption Sunday, the solemnity of the Assumption of the Blessed Virgin Mary. To teach us a little more about that, Father James Kubicki, always a joyful voice, will join us. And right around the corner, Eric Scheidler is with us from Chicago with all the pro-life news that's going on this week as well. So we certainly look forward to that. So keep on listening and keep on sharing more about Relevant Radio. John Morales joining us next week. Still a couple more days of vacation for John, well-deserved, and we appreciate this opportunity to hang out with you and come out and play just a little bit more.